For those of you that haven't been involved in what's been going on, I had a surgery where they did a triple hernia repair and found that the walls of my stomach were so thin they could see through them. So had they not repaired the hernias, I don't know, maybe my whole stomach would have exploded, I don't know. But that was kind of serious. And, you know, while they were at it, y'all going to wonder about it because I've always been known for the big belly. I'll let them go ahead and cut that off too. So when this is over and all these binders and bandages and swelling are gone, they're not going to have a belly anymore either. But we went into complications and my oxygen went really low, like 58, and I wasn't breathing well. So they put me on oxygen tanks all the way up to 8, whatever those are, liters. And I'm just going to show you the miracles of what God did. Because I had brought a prophecy to the church that I knew I was going to go through surgery. I've gone through surgery in the past, and it hurts. I mean, I was dreading it, and I just really didn't want to do it. I was so scared because I knew how bad it could be. And God had told me there is purpose in the pain, and you are going to get to be a prophet who is going to live a picture of prophecy for Burning Bush. What you're going to go through, you cannot endure. And what the church is getting ready to go through is a season of growing pain. And it is pain with purpose. We have begged God. We have begged Him. We want to carry your glory. The glory of God is the character of God, the love of God. And I have always been a solution person. People tell me I'm more like a guy than a girl because when somebody's all upset and crying, I'm standing back thinking, half of what they're crying about could be solved, you know? Just if they just take this truth and own it, they wouldn't need to cry. So how can I feel sorry for them? Just here, let's fix it. You won't need to cry, you know? But when I was laying in there after, in the recovery room, it was really amazing because people were talking and moving around, but Janiya was there and she was just rubbing my arm. And I felt the love of God in that touch. And I got so addicted to that touch that whenever she backed away, I would like, where'd she go? Where'd she go? Where'd she go? And at one point, I heard the word leaving, and I said, no, please don't leave me. All I wanted was to be touched. I didn't need a solution. I needed a touch. And that just did something in me to appreciate the hug, the compassion, the letting the love of God just touch somebody, you know? So that was the first amazing thing God did for me was He made me like a little baby that couldn't even breathe on my own. And our church is in a place that without hooking up to the oxygen of God, we're without breath. Right. You know, we are just without breath. And I had to hang on to that tank. I couldn't even get out of bed on my own. And it was a few days before I got out of bed at all. I was so bad off. And then when I walked, I had to hang on to that tank everywhere I went because I could not breathe without it. On my daughters, Janiya couldn't stay there, and Jackie and Jamie took turns. They slept there. They were just there. And I was just, you know, I thought about we just went through Christmas saying, how would it be to be God trapped as a baby, somebody changing your diaper? I mean, here he is with the mind of God, but he couldn't speak yet. He hadn't learned how to speak yet. Totally dependent. He knew what it felt like to be totally dependent. And, you know, you don't get the depth of that kind of compassion and love unless you need it. So he could have healed me like that, but I wouldn't have been changed like I was changed by being taken care of by love and learning to appreciate that. So I got to the point I really would have liked to have gone home. And they did the walking test on me, and I got to where when I was in bed, I could keep my oxygen at 95. But when I got up and walked, even with my tank, it would drop to 88 with the tank on level 8. So they said, there's no way. You're going to be here several more days. Well, the next morning I woke up, and Jackie said, you seem to be doing better. Let's just pull your little oxygen off and see what you do. So we pulled it off and kept the counter on, and I was keeping it right up there, you know. It was just like that. It was staying up there. So I called them and said, I want to go home. I want to pass that test. they came and tested me, and I walked around the thing and kept it at 88 without the tank. And they said, well, we could let you go, but you have double pneumonia in your lungs, and there's no way you can leave until we get that under control. You had an x-ray yesterday. And I said, well, I want it retaken. So they retook my x-ray. They had just walked in the room and said, 95% improvement in your lungs. We can let you go home. While I was getting my clothes on to go home, we got the phone call, and they told me my oldest son just had a stroke. And this is John. I mean, Jim is still joking. You don't mean John. You must have meant Jim, the short, fat one, you know, that never works out and lives on junk and has diabetes. Nope. John, 6'1", Schwarzenegger, pressing 300 pounds, eating healthy. Well, pressing 300 pounds, he tore the main artery in his neck, and it shot a blood clot to his brain. So John works at Chrysler and computers. He's mathematician, brilliant. So I'm in the middle of getting discharged, and I left that hospital and went straight to John's hospital.
You got a call
in the hospital about his stroke. And all I could do was just sit there and weep, just cried. I have never cried so much in my life. I'm not a crier. I don't cry. And that's all I could do was cry. And when I looked at him, his mouth is crooked. He couldn't speak. He's paralyzed on one side of his body, couldn't move, and all I could do was cry. I mean, there's just, I wanted to hold him. I just wanted to grab him up like a baby, you know, and I couldn't even get out of my chair and do anything but hold his hand. So I felt so hopeless to do anything for him, and a couple of days I stayed over there and went up to see him as much as I could, and, you know, he began to recover a little bit. But John's a joker. He's never been an affectionate. He's kind of like Nate, you know, you don't have to hug me. Let's just get that over with, you know. He's a joker. So I really had to pray every time I went there, God, don't let him see in my eyes hopelessness and grief, you know. I have to do this on his terms, you know. I have to meet him on his terms. And he started improving a little. The last day I was there, you know those little breathy things they make you suck and make that ball come up? Well, they wanted my ball to go to 1,500, and I never got it past 750. I think on the last day, I finally pulled it up to that 1,000. I think it's like 3,000 at the top. So the last day I was there, John says, watch. And he picked up his breath ball, and he goes, and it goes to 750, and he said, see, 1,000, see. And he goes, shoots it up to the top. He was making fun of me, and he sat there and laughed and laughed and laughed. So he got a sense of humor back that day. But what I really want to share is what God told me. Because in all of this, this is the message for Burning Bush. Psalm 29. I got my worship on from last couple weeks up here in the room. Oh, I think I'm open to it once I get my Bible page. Yep. The Psalm of David, given to the Lord, O ye mighty, given to the Lord glory and strength, given to the Lord the glory due his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord is upon many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. Yea, the Lord breaks the cedars of Lebanon. He makes them also to skip like a calf. Lebanon and Syrian like a young unicorn. The voice of the Lord divides the flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. The Lord shaketh the wilderness of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord make the hinds to calf and discovers the forest. And in his temple does everyone speak of his glory. The Lord sits upon the flood. Yea, the Lord sits king forever. The Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. What stood out to me for 3 days, and this was actually the very first day I could read. My eyes, for some reason, just weren't working. But a few days ago, all I could think of, the voice of the Lord is upon the waters. And that just stuck in me. God, what are you saying to me? Your voice is upon the waters. What are you saying to me? And then I remembered a vision I had a couple months ago. Jesus standing on the waters. And that's standing on what's impossible to do, saying, this is where I am. To come to me, you are going to have to walk on water. And then I said, the voice of God on the water. You know, his voice has done everything. His voice created the whole world. His voice created my son's entire complicated brain. And now they say there's three spots, three brain cell areas that are dead. They'll never revive. They're dead. But we will revive everything we can. And after months of rehab, we'll see what comes back and what is the permanent damage of those three dead areas. But the voice of God who created the brain could say, live, live, live.
Right.
If it can make a whole brain, how easy to speak life into three little cells.
Right.
And that got a hold of me. So easy for our God to completely heal my son.
Yeah. Right.
But there's purpose in pain. And what is the message he's trying to say to us? You know, there's another time we see him on the waters, and that's in Matthew 14, in verse 24, when his disciples had gone out in the ship, and it said, but when the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. There was a timing when everything was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. We are in the fourth watch. We are in the fourth watch here at Burning Bush. We're in a time where we're going to see a troubled sea. We're going to see a dark time. We're going to see the winds blowing and things raging, and some of us are going to have some hard times. You know, that prophecy I brought for the church, at the same time I brought a prophecy for me. And in the prophecy for me, God said, I am with you. But you are going to go through some pain, pain with purpose. But I am with you, and there is purpose. And he said, and you're going to have to weather some griefs in your heart. My heart has never been more grieved than when I heard about my son and saw him. But when this happened, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. The sea of impossibilities. When we're in the midst of that darkness, that storm, there he is. There he is. It seemed hopeless, impossible, but that's when he came standing right on the impossible situation. They were in a place where they had to be listening. They had to be listening and watching. In verse 26, and when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled. They were confused because all of a sudden I realized how easy it would be for God to heal my son. But at the same time realized he didn't. He wasn't. Why? Does God like us to suffer? No. Does he bring suffering to the people that aren't doing so good to straighten them up? No. Those are the people he brings the most gentle kindness to so they learn about his goodness. Job was the most righteous man on the face of the earth. And God drew Satan's attention and said, hey, have you considered Job? God didn't kill Job's family. He didn't make Job sick. But he allowed it because Job knew God. He had given his whole life to him. And he wanted more. He wanted more of the character of God in his own life. And God said, trouble will develop it. In your need and your suffering and your finding me in that place, you will be able to know me in a deeper way, and I will be able to trust you to know me in that place. a newborn baby, somebody still fighting addiction and not knowing God, they're going to be getting the goodness of God poured on them. So when the storm comes, it's an opportunity for everything you've been asking him for. They were confused, and they didn't recognize it as God, and they cried out in fear. But straightway, verse 27, Jesus spoke. See, he was out there on that water, but they didn't know it until he spoke. We don't recognize God until he begins to speak. When he begins to speak something to us, our suffering takes on meaning. He said, "It is I." He said, "Be of good cheer." You know, that didn't mean cheer like, woo, laugh, party. It meant be of good courage, because it is I. He said, "I am in this. Don't be afraid. This is me. I'm doing something fantastic in your life." We want to go where he's taking us, burning bush. Then recognize him on the sea of impossibilities. Whatever it is, financial, physical, emotional, whatever it is you're struggling with, say, "Show me, God. Show me how you're standing in this. Say something to me. Give me a word. Speak." Verse 28. Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it be you, bid me come unto you on the water." God, call me out of the boat. You know, they were in the boat. They were his disciples. That is amazing. No one else even saw Jesus. They didn't even get to experience this miracle. They didn't see him out on the water. They didn't hear his voice. But Peter got more than even the rest of God's people there. They stayed in the boat where they felt a little safer. I'm staying in my comfort zone, staying in what's familiar, staying in what seems the safest place. But not Peter. He said, "Okay, if this storm is of you, and that's really you, I want to come where you are." And that's where we are. When something is hard in your life, don't say, "God, why? What are you doing to me?" First of all, he's not doing it. He's allowing it. He doesn't do evil things. Second of all, he's there in it for you. All you have to say is, "Where are you in this? Call me out of this. Show me something in this." So Peter steps out of the boat. Verse 29. Now remember, it was Psalm 29 that God quickened to me. His voice is upon many waters. Now we're in verse 29, and that 29 jumped out. And he said, God spoke, and he said, "Come." He said, "Come." We are in the 29th hour. We're right at the end of something, at the completion of a time, of a whole time period in history. We're in the fourth watch here. When God's getting ready to call us out to walk on water, we're right there. My son was born on December 29th, fourth hour of the year, end of the year. He's even a prophecy and doesn't know it yet. Even the date he was born, the date that he's going through this, it's all part of the prophecy for us. Okay, so Peter says, "If you would speak to me and tell me to come." See, whatever God says is going to happen. Whatever he says, not what we want, but what he says. And he said, "Come." So Peter obeys God, and he gets out of that safe, secure, comfortable boat, and he walks on water. And it didn't look the way he thought it would. We think we're ready. I was ready. Surgery's going to be horrible pain. And okay, God, come on, cut me open. I'm ready. I wasn't ready for my son to have a stroke. Didn't look the way I thought it would. And then, if God can heal his brain with a word, why not? Doesn't look like I've just suddenly had this implant of faith of how easy it is for him to heal. And he gives me this great revelation of how easy it is, and then he doesn't do it. That's confusing. So Peter said, "Wow, this wind is getting really, wow, look around me, it's dark, the wind is strong." And he sinks. We're going to sink. I've sunk I've sunk so many times in the last 12 days, I think. I have sunk. I mean, Harvey always talks about what's it like to get saved, you know? And he gives the story of Bob. He doesn't have arms or legs. He's just a head bobbing out there in the water. I've been a head bobbing up and down in the water of this thing, helpless, not understanding. And I've sunk. I mean, I've sunk. I have just sat there over my son and done nothing but weep. Why, God? I can't even be there for him. Why can't I even go be there for him? Others are there for him. I can't even go there and help him. Why, when I'm helpless, when I can't be a mom, I can't be a mom? Why? I have sunk in this thing. But Peter did the right thing when we're sinking, because we do sink. He cried out, Lord, help me. Lord, save me. He took the step of faith. He did it for a minute, and he fell, and he cried. And guess what? Jesus still did not calm that sea, but he did pick Peter up in the midst of it and carry him back to the boat. Picked him up and carried him. That's where I'm at right now. I'm being carried back to the boat. That's the part of this I'm in. I'm getting carried back to the boat. I think you're my boat. This is my boat. That's why I want to get here today. This is my boat. This is my safe place, you know. I love being home. But I'm still being carried back to that boat. But God showed me something. I don't know John's future. But I know some really good things that are happening right now. Jamie and Jackie are there for him. They are there for his wife. They have stepped up. They have been her strength. They are bonding with her. My son Jim, he calls me. Everybody sees Jim as the big clown, but he's so tender. He called me. He said, Mom, I have just sat and wept and wept and wept. Why, John? Why not me? He said, I really would trade him places. I could take this. I'm just a clown anyway. Everybody could laugh at me, make fun of me, and I'll make a comedy routine out of it. But John is dignified. John doesn't want to be seen like sitting there drooling, you know? He said, I wish I could take it for him. Really, why, John? I've seen my children just pour in love on their brother and on his wife. And his children, he's got two, and they've laid their lives down to stay there every minute with their mom and with him, getting him through therapy. I've seen that family. But that's not even the greatest thing I believe God is doing. I believe that there's a call in John's life for this great move of God. And it's not sitting behind a desk at Chrysler brilliantly programming our cars for us. You know? He's got other things. He is very talented in filming, and he would love to be filming special effects in Christian movies. I mean, that's just one thing. He's got all kinds of other talents and gifts that so far, these are his hobbies, not his life. I believe that God is going to restore every part of his brain to qualify him to walk in his call in the future God has for him in this great move.
Right.
And it may not be Chrysler. It may not be back to Chrysler. He may never be the man he was, but he's going to be the man he needs to be for this next phase of his life. And he's going to love it more than the life he had before. I've already seen my dignified, refined son become emotional. Not crying, but using every bit of strength he had to put his legs over the side of the bed and sit up to say to his wife, hug. He just wanted to be hugged. I know, don't do it, because I've made it so far. Don't start me. My son, who would go, get the hug over with, reaches for my hand when I'm there, and he holds it with his hand. He's learned how to receive love. That's worth more than a degree in engineering. Good things are happening. God is changing his life. He's changing my life. Through all this pain, we're getting what we want. We're getting the glory of God himself getting to live through us when we can't do anything but depend on him. And that's what we've been asking for. But know that it's not going to come by staying in the boat. not by staying in the boat. I wrote on a torn sheet, so see my paper. I didn't even know it was torn, so that's how it came through. So funny. Jesus caught him and he carried him back to that boat. Now, I'm going to kind of sum this up so I don't talk a lot longer. But everyone in that boat, they were disciples. They were in training. They had surrendered their lives. They were following Jesus. And they were us. They were us in that boat. We launched out. We left this world. We left our normal life. And we gave everything to him. We're following him. But we're still hanging on to some form of safety and understanding, and we're still hanging on to something, you know. We're still where we're at right now, which is in that boat. Peter got out of the boat. Every one of us won't get out of the boat when the storm hits. A few will get out of the boat. Everyone in that boat ended up seeing Jesus tell the sea to be calm, and it did. And then they said, "You are the Son of God." They saw it, then they believed it. Peter believed it before he saw it. He got a little disappointed in the middle, but then he got carried, and he became very dependent on Christ. All of them returned to land and began to tell everyone else about it. We can be in the boat. We can hang around here, and we can see a few people get out of the boat and see what God does to change them. And we can testify of what we've seen of God that's real. Or we can get out of the boat, we can experience it ourselves. Right up close and personal. It hurts. It's scary out there in that storm. But it's so worth it. I wanted a dream. And people prayed for me to get my dream. While I'm under anesthesia, let me have, you know, heaven is real. Let me go to heaven and see heavenly things and come back and tell you. No, I didn't get that. I said, God, manifest yourself to me. He has manifest himself through all of this. Like never before. I know him deeper than I've ever known him. I need him more than I've ever needed him. I love, his love is just amazing. Amazing. And he's brought it through people. But you have to want it. You have to be willing. And you have to be willing to lose everything you've got to gain everything he's got for you. And that's our prophecy to this point in time. That's our prophecy. I'm still getting carried back to the boat. We'll find out as time goes on what happens after we get back and the storm completely ends. I want to encourage you, because you know what? Maybe there'll be a part two. But the voice of the Lord. Go back to Psalm 29 and just ask God to quicken the power of just a whisper, just a word when God speaks it into your life. That is the amazing, amazing part of it, the voice of the Lord. Everything he does in 29, dividing fire. We've prayed for the fire. He divides those flames. Who gets this part, that part? Fire, fire, fire. It's coming. I love you, Lord, and I just pray that your Holy Spirit will quicken this lesson to all of us. You are amazing. You are beautiful. You are so peaceful. And we need your peace. We need your love. We need to grow in your love so the fullness of Christ can live through us. Thank you, Jesus.